This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Hong Kong unicorn Lala Move has been described as the Uber for logistics. While primarily a B2B service, the platform's awareness in Malaysia has grown as merchants and customers use Lala Move as an alternative to Grab food during the movement control order. So should Grab or possibly even Gojek be concerned about Lala Move's growing presence in the region? To find out, I speak with Blake Larson, Managing Director and Head of International for Lala Move. Blake, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thanks for having me.
Blake, let's just start off with the biggest news, of course, is the pandemic and how it's impacted businesses. How has it impacted your business?
Yeah, I mean, as it's been an interesting time for everyone personally, it has been for us in our business too, especially as we're seen as a company that really focuses on delivering the essentials. So we've really had to adapt both internally, how our employees work, how our processes work, and then also how do we work with our driver partners as well as our merchants. And, you know, it's kind of upended everything in a very, very short amount of time.
Now, Blake, we've also seen an uptick in delivery services. So has this, on a macro scale, has this been an opportunity or is the negative side stronger?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually a bit of both, and it's really market level. For example, when China went into lockdown, you know, our business dropped by 95% the next day. I'm happy to report that we're actually up above pre-Chinese New Year levels again in China. Other markets, for example, like Singapore and Malaysia, it's been, as we had a growing business, we've seen growth of 3 to 4x since January, just as the markets are looking for different ways to actually move their goods around the city. They've really looked to Lala Move as a good partner to kind of navigate these very unusual times.
So on when it comes to revenue, Blake, what's Lala Move's biggest revenue generator?
Yeah, so we work a platform model. So we do a revenue share with all of our drivers. So the merchants pay for the delivery, and then of the proceeds, we share that with the driver. So that's our largest revenue generator.
Can you tell us what the percentage model is, or is that still under wraps?
It's under wraps, but it's pretty tight, and we try to keep it pretty low, you know, compared to a lot of the competitors out there, you know, making sure that our drivers are really making a fair and equitable income for their level of work. So we're very competitive in this space. I think our first customer is actually our drivers. You know, if our drivers are not successful, then we're not successful, and then our merchants aren't successful. So actually, when we talk about our drivers and how we work with them, all of our policies are in place to make sure that it is fair and equitable, whether it's the, you know, the revenue sharing part, it's the onboarding part, it's the dispute resolution. They're as much a customer for us as our merchants are consumers.
Right. And Blake, you primarily operate in the B2B segment, which is business to business. And this has been impacted by the pandemic as businesses have had to close. Has the business to consumer part of the business been able to offset the damage here?
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well. I mean, our primary target really is SMEs. I mean, we really look to be their partner to help them grow their business. So we've seen a lot of these businesses that were purely offline players finding, like, looking for ways to go online during the pandemic. So that segment has definitely, you know, transformed, and it's pushed a lot of late adopters to technology to try services like ours. So that's been good for our core segment. But as you mentioned, the B2C segment is also very interesting because when everybody's restricted, they can't go out and, you know, transact the way they normally do, or, you know, go buy what they need. They've turned to look for alternative means. And, you know, the consumer segment is definitely looking more to leverage our network of drivers to get their, you know, daily lives in place.
Now, it's easier to understand what B2C means because we, as consumers, we understand that a little better. But how do you serve the SMEs between each other? What kind of services are we talking about here?
Yeah, so for the SME segments, I mean, we service a lot of different industries. But if you look in the restaurant space, for example, a B2C company might go put the actual menu on their platform and then do the delivery as part of that transaction. So they would send a rider to that restaurant to pick up their food and deliver it to the end consumer. Where we actually go out and we talk to the SME, the restaurant, and we say, hey, do you need to do delivery? Let us take care of that for you. But we actually aren't trying to own their end customer. So we're actually just providing we're helping them create a stronger value proposition for their end customer. So this is the difference. We're not really trying to own the end consumer in that space. And we're also, you know, in the SME segment, you see a lot of the small online shops. A lot of people have gone to more social selling. And so a lot of these people, you know, they don't want to buy a truck or a motorcycle or employ extra drivers. So they're really looking to leverage the size of our fleet and scale and how fast we can actually deliver in a market, because it's normally under an hour. And this gives them the flexibility to kind of take the upswings in their business. And when business goes down a little bit, they don't have all of this overhead just sitting there.
Right. So that actually on this note, in Malaysia, I've noticed that more people are using Lala Move for food delivery as much as try to bypass the traditional cost of using a platform like, for example, Grab Food. Is food delivery going to be a bigger priority for you going forward?
You know, it's always been a segment that is naturally attracted to our services because, again, as I mentioned before, we're not really trying to take a commission off of the food order. So we are naturally looked at as an alternative to maybe some of the other platforms in the market. So it's always been a strength of ours to partner because we're able to do very, very fast delivery. And this is why the restaurants initially came to us, and also because we aren't taking a cut of their order. So this will continue to be part of our business going forward for sure.
Do you have any growth numbers in terms of partnering with restaurants or the food delivery side for Malaysia?
Not off the top of my head do I have the exact numbers, but like I said, our business has grown, both the larger vehicles, but even the motorcycles who are doing a lot of the food delivery has grown by over 400% since just January. So you can see, I mean, the market was already growing really well for us. It's actually our fastest growing market ever in Southeast Asia, kind of on par with the Philippines. The last couple months because of COVID is really been a boost to our local business there in Malaysia.
All right. So now, considering that your primary focus is B2B, have you formed any long-term partnerships with SMEs or big corporates here in Malaysia?
We've definitely talked to a lot of different SMEs. And from a partnership standpoint, I mean, one company that we've worked with for a long time in Malaysia is Demakan, which is a food subscription delivery business. So we've done a lot of their deliveries for quite some time. But I mean, we have many, many different partners, both large and small. And especially as we target the SMEs, a lot of them aren't long-term partnerships. At the beginning, they just kind of start off as using us and kind of shift their delivery business over to us over the years.
All right. And you've talked about that growth this year. Now, in Malaysia, according to SSM records, you recorded a loss in the financial year 2018. Obviously, that was some time ago. That was the year you first launched here. So right now in Malaysia, are you operationally profitable here?
Yes, I believe in the last couple of months, we became operationally profitable. So yes, the business in Malaysia is going quite well.
And overall, is Lala Move as a group operationally profitable?
Yeah, yes, it is. I mean, we've always been very financially conservative as a company, and actually it helps us weather storms like the recent one and come out stronger. So it's something that we take very seriously.
I've been speaking with Blake Larson, Managing Director and Head of International of Lala Move. Up next, we'll get into IPO plans, expansion into India's fragmented market, and competition with Grab and Gojek, Southeast Asia's biggest unicorns. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Today, I'm speaking with Blake Larson, Managing Director and Head of International of Lala Move. One thing that's been happening recently, Blake, is the fact that the big tech companies are starting to make acquisitions. Is there a price for a buyout when it comes to Lala Move?
I mean, we're ready to take this as far as we can. We really look to the external market, and I think UPS has the biggest market cap of any logistics company, and it's somewhere around $100 billion. So we have our sights set much bigger than what we are today, and we feel like even after 6 years, we're just getting started.
Now let's talk about potential IPO. Is an IPO in Hong Kong still part of the longer-term plan, considering the continuing civil unrest, the pandemic effects, and the growing Cold War between the U.S. and China?
We're very proud of being from Hong Kong and being a Hong Kong company. But when it comes to IPO, it's definitely an option for the company in the future. But actually, we don't spend very much time talking about this. We always say if we build a good company built on solid business metrics, solid financial metrics, that we'll have a lot of options in the future. So It's not in the cards right now. Where we'll do it will depend on when we want to do it first. And so I think this is yet to come. And right now, our entire focus is just on growing our core business across our existing markets.
And speaking about your markets, China, I think, is your most important one. What is the percentage of total revenue from that market?
I mean, it's well over 50%. We have over 250 cities operating in mainland China, and outside of mainland China, we have about 20. So, you know, on an order basis, it's a bit closer, but because we do more large vehicles in China compared to Southeast Asia, which is more motorcycles, we see a greater percentage of the revenue coming from mainland China.
Right. And how much more room is there to further your expansion in China?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think right now, I mean, I last count, it was around 280 operating cities. I think this covers more than 80% of the GDP in mainland China. So the growth will really probably come from existing cities as opposed to new cities and through new either products or services that we offer in those cities.
Right. And speaking of growth, you've been looking to India, highlighting it as a part of your major expansion plans. Why is India so attractive?
Yeah, I mean, India is a very, very exciting market for us. I mean, other than the fact that it's, you know, another market over a billion people like China, we see a lot of similarities in the challenges that merchants and, you know, drivers are having in that market. So anytime you see a lot of fragmentation, both on the user side and on the driver side, that there seems a big opportunity. And a lot of the Indian market is very, very offline, done in very traditional means. And consequently, there's a lot of inefficiency for both the drivers and the small businesses. So we opened 6 markets in India last year, and we're, you know, there's another 47 markets in India with more than a million people. So there's a lot of potential in that market for us.
Right. And what's the growth been like in India?
It's been extremely strong until the lockdown about a couple months ago. So it was our fastest growing market in its first year, those 6 cities. With the COVID, it definitely slowed things down a little bit. But I'm happy to say in the last 4 weeks, we've seen consecutive growth and we're almost back up to pre-COVID levels.
Yeah, generally speaking, India has been considered a tough market to operate in. It's big, it's fragmented, and many foreign firms have gone in to fail. Recently, Facebook partnered up with Reliance Group in India. Are you looking for a local Indian partner in that market?
Right now, we're not looking for a local Indian partner. I would say one of our core strategies and one of our, you know, core competencies is really to go into a market and know what things drive our underlying business, but also know that we can't assume too much. So every time we enter a new market, I mean, we also entered Brazil and Mexico last year. There's definitely blind spots that we have. So we don't assume too much. And we actually go in and take a very much an open mind and a learning approach to each of these markets. And India is definitely no exception to this. However, like the generalized problems that we see in local deliveries exist in India, they just might take a different form.
Moving over to Southeast Asia, although they started with e-hailing, Grab and Gojek operate in delivery as well in a similar fashion. Are you going to be able to challenge Southeast Asia's biggest unicorns, considering that they have a local advantage in the region?
Yeah, I would say those are, you know, two very good and strong companies that have grown considerably. Actually, it started in the ride-hailing business back in 2013 with a company called Easy Taxi that's no longer in Southeast Asia. But we were competing with Grab at the time, and you can see how big and, you know, almost saturated in certain markets Grab has become. They've done a nice job. What I would say is that while there is some overlap between our business model and theirs, I would say that we approach the segments and the markets a bit different. They really are focused on that C segment. And though that they are doing some types of deliveries, their core client base and how they approach them and work with them is a bit different for us. So while there is that overlap, I see us, you know, kind of taking a value proposition to clients that might not be their clients and or offering something different to the clients that they do serve.
And what do you consider the most attractive market in Southeast Asia at this point? Most of the time, people point towards Indonesia or Vietnam.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think all the markets have their strengths, right? So again, Malaysia's grown extremely well for us. And I think As a middle tier to high income market, as far as Southeast Asia standards, this offers an opportunity, and it's not nearly as competitive. So I think this is why Malaysia is a good market for us. Indonesia is obviously something that a lot of capital has gone to, as well as a lot of companies have opened there because it's a massive, massive opportunity with, you know, over 250 million people. But with that brings a ton of competition. So you're going to have to invest a lot in the long term in Indonesia. Vietnam, similar, very young population, growing, seeing it's very dynamic. But the unit economics are a lot tougher there. For example, you know, an average delivery might only be $1 there. Where in, you know, Singapore, you're looking at $25. So you just have to do a lot more volume in Vietnam. Right now, I'm very bullish on Philippines, honestly. I see a huge opportunity, especially in the Metro Manila area, to keep growing. It's got a population, you know, Philippines similar to Vietnam. It's not as competitive as, say, in Indonesia. And I would say that there's a high consumption of technology amongst both, you know, consumers, merchants, and drivers for us.
Right. And do you have a presence in Thailand at this point?
Yes, we do. Bangkok actually does the most orders per day for us in the entire region.
And you mentioned the unit economics earlier. Is Singapore the, I guess, the most profitable in that sense in this region?
Yeah, I, from an order-specific standpoint, yes. Singapore offers, you know, again, like I said, it's, you know, the average delivery is something like $20 to $25 compared to Vietnam, where it's a dollar. Indonesia's $1.50, something like this. So from each individual order, Singapore obviously has a the most developed market is reflected in all of the unit economics.
And, you know, we were talking about Indonesia and the competition there. Now, obviously, Gojek is that big player in the region. And recently, they saw in investments from Facebook and PayPal. Are you looking at any partnerships in the region? Is there anything in the works?
No huge partnerships regionally. You know, we've worked with different logistic companies in the region to help do deliveries and you know, sometimes different e-commerce companies, you know, similar to like Lazada or Shopee, et cetera. But really for us as a local delivery player and our core segment is really those SMEs, our teams really spend the most time focusing in the very local market.
Right. And earlier you mentioned markets beyond Asia. I think one of them was Mexico. What other markets do you operate in beyond this region?
Yeah, so right now we're just in Brazil and Mexico, but you know, we're looking to do further expansion this year beyond that.
Was there any particular reason for those markets outside, I guess, the density of those cities?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's a great observation. First is Mexico City and Sao Paulo are huge mega cities, and they operate very similarly to some of the mega cities that you see in Southeast Asia, right? Whether it's Manila or Jakarta or Bangkok or something like this. So lots of similarities, and we've actually seen that translate very, very well for our early business over in those markets, even though we launched late last year. And also from a GDP per capita standpoint, and basically a lot of the GDP for those markets being concentrated in one or two cities, with the exception of Brazil, Latin America looks to be a very attractive market and very similar to Southeast Asia in a lot of respects.
Right. And what about North America? Is that in your plans at all at this point?
Yeah, we're actually looking at launching the US later this year. So pending, you know, all of the turbulence in the external market and how we can navigate some of those and be able to actually get on a plane and go start it. It's something we put a lot of research in, and we'll get started there this year.
Blake, Lala Move made an investment into Interloc. They're a first and second mile delivery player. How does this play into your platform?
Yeah, so this is really like our first external investment in a company that's in the logistics space. And there's a few reasons we looked at this deal. One was one of our existing investors brought it to our attention, and we trust them very much. And two, it's an adjacent space to us. So we, like I said, we really focus on the local delivery, and they really focus on the first and second mile or between cities, intercity, where we're intra-city. So we're always trying to look at ways to learn more about the logistics space. It's a huge thing. It's hard to operate in every segment of it. So this is our way of actually kind of dipping our toe into something that we're less familiar with to see what we can learn.
And are there any more plans for further investments or M&A?
Yeah, this is M&A isn't really a core part of our strategy. I don't see anything on the horizon. We really just put our nose to the ground and keep trying to penetrate our local markets and focus on that local delivery.
Now, Blake, considering how turbulent 2020 has been in many different respects, what is going to be Lalamove's biggest challenge going forward?
That's a tough question. So it's a great question. What we typically say is let's spend our energy and time and resources on the things that we can control, and let the external things, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do independent of what we want them to do. And so what we'll continue to do is, be very financially disciplined for those external things that we can't control. And, what we may have to do is just accelerate different plans at different times. I think the toughest thing is just making sure that we maintain that agility across multiple time zones, multiple markets, multiple cultures, given the unpredictability of the external circumstance. So as an organization gets bigger, we're up to over 5,000 employees now. How do you keep that mindset that made you successful today, which is really about agility? And I mean, if 2020 has taught us anything, is that we don't know what tomorrow brings. And so that agility will come to hopefully bear fruit for us if we can keep it really front and center for our organization.
Right. And on that note, Blake, thank you so much for joining me on the line today.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
I've been speaking to Blake Larson, Managing Director and Head of International for Lalamove, and this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Gunnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.